Chapter 2. End of the Line. Eternity Terminus. Through the Palace. Eternity Terminus, 13th of Secundus. Bolts rattled in the pitch dark, startling Katsuhiro from the numb, aimless terror that had replaced sleep. The door to the cargo container swung down and out on creaking hinges, slamming hard onto rockcrete. Light that wasn't so very bright, but seemed as glaring as a plasma flash, flooded the compartment. When his eyes adjusted, lumens grouped in berry bunches on iron vines were the first thing Katsuhiro saw of the Imperial Palace. Beyond the lights was a ceiling of coloured glaceic, softly backlit. Everything else was obscured by the throng crammed into the freight container. Since the very beginning of the 16-hour trip, there had been standing room only. His legs shook with the effort of remaining still so long. If it weren't for the bodies rammed in beside him, Katsuhiro would have fallen. Trying to crane his neck to see better invited a sharp spasm of cramp. His kit bag pulled at him, sending spiders of pain over his scalp and making his shoulder ache. The bag had been plucked from a pile of identical bags and slung around his neck when he boarded. There had been insufficient room for him to adjust it. He blinked and cracked his stiff spine. As if summoned by the pop of his bones, the noise outside started abruptly and overwhelmingly. Whistles blew, voices bellowed. Move, 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 move! The passengers were slow to obey. The groans and mutters of men and women long confined turned to shouts as burly men reached into the containers and hauled individuals out at random. After hours and hours of the rattling, stifling quiet of the train, the noise was terrifying. Despite the demands of the marshals outside, the conscripts shuffled forwards in the dazed way common to large crowds. They were hemmed in by the people around them. Progress was tortuous. The light outside remained unreachable. Biting gusts of thin air blasted into the container, churning up the damp, sweaty fug. There had been nowhere to relieve themselves. Urine stink stung Katsuhiro's eyes. The threat of a shock mall's buzz motivated the first row onto the platform, and the occupants of the container surged. They toppled out, some falling, trampled by those behind. With no more agency than a molecule of water, Katsuhiro drained towards the open ramp. The lights and the beautiful ceiling drew nearer and nearer. Then the man in front of Katsuhiro was yanked forwards, hard by the bag around his neck, and Katsuhiro went after him, falling into the Imperial Palace and the open gullet of war. Thousands upon thousands of people were spilling from containers, clamped to flatbed trucks, into a monorail terminus. Katsuhiro could not see far, but the pressure of many people pushed at him from all directions. Voices shouted, wailed, screamed, and begged in cacophonous profusion. A marshal half-caught Katsuhiro, and a flash of a face behind an armored visor joined all the other fragments of sensory information that fought their way into his mind. Badges of the Adeptus Arbites, surmounted with unfamiliar heraldry, flashed past, and Katsuhiro was shoved into the reeking flow of humanity pouring towards destruction. Bells and sirens sang from every quarter, and from far away there came a steady thudding, as insistent and dull as a thousand hearts. He was turned around in the crowd, sucked into eddies in the human river, before being shoved back out into swift currents. Men and women of all kinds jostled him. Scribes, old warriors, algae farmers, technicians, rich, poor, young, old. Every hue of skin and eye and hair present upon Terra was there. Every uniform and badge of occupation Katsuhiro had ever seen, and thousands more besides. His head spun with the overload. More details stabbed into his awareness, painful as darts. Decorations on the walls, a noble face captured in a marble relief, a sign proclaiming his location to be Eternity Terminus, sub-platform 998 Epsilon. The expressions of his fellows, two in particular, one blue-eyed and leering, the other brimful of fear, struck him. Hands grabbed at him. He was funneled between a stack of boxes, and a gun slapped into his hands. The crush increased as the crowd slowed unbearably. Elbows played his ribs as if they were bars on a semandron. The smell was dreadful. The noise was worse. Then he was out the other side, pushed along with gathering speed. All the people on the platform had only two things in common— The mass-produced lasguns, clasped in their uncertain hands, and the kit bags slung around each of their necks, dragging them into hunches. Some struggled, now they were moving, to switch the straps to their shoulders, but there was as little space on the platform as there had been on the trains. Katsuhiro saw a man drop his gun. When the man bent to pick it up, the weight of the crowd pushed him down. Katsuhiro did not see him rise. Katsuhiro blundered into a pillar, raising more bruises to add to those he already had. His feet snagged on something soft. He glanced down to see a dead man, blood running from his nose and ears, crushed by the herd. He recoiled, rebounded off a giant stacked with vat-grown muscle, bald, squinting, and full of violence.
"Watch it,"
the giant growled. Katsuhiro backed away apologetically, and the crowd caught him again, whirling him away, while from above the rapid, hurried heartbeats boomed on and on. The platforms opened out and the ceiling sprang away from them, lofted upwards on giant piers of stone and plasteel, the crowd spreading across the vast concourse sheltered beneath. The panes of coloured glass lost their individual form, merging into a display that stopped the breath in Katsuhiro's lungs. Captured in Glissaic, men and women stood victorious upon a field of battle. Supplicants bowed, defeated, holding out their hands in fealty towards the figure dominating the centre of the piece.
"The Emperor," Katsuhiro gasped.
So lifelike was the display, so radiant the figure, that for a second the addled Katsuhiro thought the master of mankind was standing above them in judgment. A triple thump of the ceaseless hearts broke the spell, stuttering the lumens behind the image and cracking certain panes to shards. Colourful razored rain fell that brought blood and screams from the crowd. The conscripts slowed again, spread out and dawdled, as a swift river is arrested by a lake. Katsuhiro had a moment to catch his breath. The sheer size of the muster was sinking in, and it terrified him. Empty trains were pulling out, fresh ones rolling in. Hot engines and overtaxed rail levitators baked the scent of metal into his nostrils. Grill gates rattled somewhere off to the right. Whistles blew again. A line of marshals, or arbitrators, or whoever they were, formed across one side of the plaza. More gently this time, the crowds were directed towards a row of arches and through the opened gates. Katsuhiro passed through into the terminus's hidden spaces, utilitarian cargo halls of new rockcrete, where cranes and conveyor belts sat idle. All were bereft of the usual goods, and full instead with the chiefest currency of war, that of human bodies. Armies and armies of people shuffled within. Issuing from a line of officers at the far side, men pushed their way deep into the crowds, grabbing people and directing them to groups that grew swiftly.
You.
There were no pauses between their words. Gloved hands grabbed shoulders, hung coloured chits around necks, and impelled the dazed populace of terror towards the officers behind them.
You,
they barked from helm speakers and external voxmeters. The voices roughed to inhumanity as they rounded up the nations of the world, broke them apart, and pressed them towards their deaths. People cried as friends, lovers, and families were separated. The officials did not notice, nor did they care.
You!
Katsuhiro's time came soon enough. A leather gauntlet grabbed him. A second dragged a green plastic chit on a chain over his head, catching his ear painfully in the process, and shoved him on his way. A small desk greeted him. Numbly, he presented his token to the army officer behind, which earned him another shove, and so, as aimless as driftwood, Katsuhiro came to a slow, grounded stop with 100 others, all clutching green plastic and blinking fearfully.
"What do we do?"
said a lean woman, wasted by years of short rations. Thinness was a look common to them all.
"You be quiet!"
shouted a uniformed man with a harried face.
"And you wait!"
The man moved on without paying them any more attention, pushing himself sideways like a blade through the recruits.
"You there!"
he shouted.
"You there, stop!"
Then he was gone, his commands vanishing into the chorus of voices echoing in the cargo hall. Katsuhiro shook. Shock, lack of food, cold, and the effort of standing upright for so many hours were each enough alone to upset his humours. Together, they brought him close to collapse. A warm hand slipped around his side and pulled him close. Ordinarily, Katsuhiro would have recoiled from such unexpected intimacy, but now he welcomed it. A small, powerfully built man had him. Shorter by a few centimetres than Katsuhiro, he had to look up to address him. He was filthy and stank of oil and stale clothes, but his smile was genuine.
"It is cold, isn't it?" he said. "Enough to knock you down if you aren't used to it. Winter at the top of the world."
Katsuhiro frowned at him, growing embarrassed by the embrace. Being so close to someone else bothered him. It was not the done thing in his subculture. Needing the support shamed him more.
"Yes," he managed. "Thank you. Please let me go. I'm fine now."
"You sure?"
The man released him anyway. The man's left hand grasped the straps of his kit bag and rifle, both slung neatly over his right shoulder. He held out his dirty right hand.
"The name's Doromik, from Baltica."
Katsuhiro swallowed his distaste and limply shook Doromek's hand.
"Katsuhiro," he said.
"Dragon Nation, sir," said Doromek. "We've got a fine mix here and no mistake. I'll tell you what, let's get you sorted out. You want to get that bag strap off your neck?"
As Katsuhiro struggled the bag over his head, it had somehow gained weight since it had been hung there, the man continued talking.
"You'll find some tablets in there. Recaf tabs, salt and glucosium energy blends. Take one of each. Chew them up. Don't just swallow them. It'll get the spit flowing in your mouth and make it easier for your body to process them. You hear me?"
"Is there water?"
"Not yet," said the dirty little man.
He looked behind him. Flustered officers were arguing with a man in the robes of an adepter, alien to Katsuhiro.
"Oh, they're not coping very well," said Doromek. "Hurry up, though. We'll be moving out soon."
"Where to?"
he said. The man snorted.
"Where do you think? The fighting. You hear that noise?"
He pointed upwards.
"The bombardment has begun. The traitors are here. This is the big..."
He frowned at Katsuhiro's fumbling.
"What are you doing to your kit? Give me that."
Doromek grabbed his bag. Katsuhiro surrendered it. Doromek set it on the ground. Once he had the drawstring open, Katsuhiro saw the contents neatly arrayed, all sealed in plastic packets. Doromek moved aside.
"You need to learn your way around this. This one, and this one."
He pointed with a strong, broad finger. Katsuhiro ripped open the packets his new companion indicated and placed the pills in his mouth.
"Thank you. I have no idea what..."
A hard-faced woman barged her way into their conversation.
"You two shut up," said the woman. "They don't like it if you talk. I don't want the attention."
"But someone's got to tell us what's going on,"
Katsuhiro protested. Another responded to this, a man even thinner than everyone else, who was cleaning his nails with a worn knife.
"They don't have to tell you anything, my friend. Nobody does."
"You're soldiers," said the woman nastily. "There are things expected of you. Shutting up is one of them."
"I'm not a soldier. I'm a third-grade enumerator for the 86th Nihon Nutrient Complex,"
said Katsuhiro. The woman shot him a grim smile.
"You were. You're a soldier now."
She drew back, looking around at the swelling gaggle of people.
"Now just shut up."
She held a finger to her lips. Above the cut-off of the half-glove she wore, her nails were incongruously well manicured. She scowled at him and turned her back.
"Charming lady,"
said Katsuhiro.
"I'm glad to see you're recovering your sense of humour,"
Doromek lowered his voice.
"But word to the wise, don't antagonise the likes of her."
He watched her carefully as he spoke.
"I recognise bad news when I see it. That one's a fighter."
A whistle blew. The officials had apparently resolved their argument.
"Green chits!"
The man was non-military, his voice unsuited to bellowing over a crowd's noise, and Katsuhiro struggled to hear what he was saying.
"Green chits, follow me!"
Without waiting to see whether all in the group had heard him or not, the official turned about and shoved his way through the throng towards more gates in the back of the cargo hall. They were taken in their groups through a massive service corridor, emerging some minutes later via a side tunnel onto another fantastically decorated public platform. Hundreds of maglev trains awaited them, their insides welcomingly lit. The far end of the platform was open to the outside. The icy wind blasted in unimpeded. The bombardment's racket roared over the trains. The firelight, flicker of exploding bombs, had taken the place of sunlight. Men yelled themselves hoarse to no effect. Only those with vox-spitters and vox-hailers had any hope of being heard, and then their commands battled one another into incomprehensibility. The moment of calm in the cargo hall seemed as if it had never happened. Katsuhiro was herded urgently onto the carriages. By the doors, menials with buckets collected chits, snatching them violently from people too dazed to understand what they were supposed to do. A single sheet flimsy was thrust into Katsuhiro's hand, and he was shoved hard from behind into the carriage.
"Move down! Move down!"
a voice crackled over the train's vox speakers. Katsuhiro stumbled his way along the aisle. The train was luxuriously appointed, each set of seats half-screened from the rest by high backs and panels of frosted plastic imprinted with symbols of unity. But there were far too many people for the seats to accommodate. Soon the aisle was full. Uniformed marshals began to physically ram people onto the train. The people behind Katsuhiro shoved at him in turn, and he was jammed into one of the nests of seats. Already 8 people sat in a space for 4. If anything, it was more crowded than the monorail cargo box that had brought him from the east. He had been separated from the few people he had spoken to, but he recognized most of the faces as being from the Green Chit group. They scowled as he tripped on their feet. He was forced closer to the window by the pressure of the crowd. Just when he thought the air would be forced from his lungs and he would suffocate, the doors slid shut and the train pulled out. Held aloft on a counter-gravitic field, the train accelerated quickly, blurring the innumerable people outside into a single heaving mass. Light flashed and the train sped outside. The great mountain of a spaceport dominated his view for a fragment of a second, huge, flat-topped and covered in lights. The maglev whipped past it before he got a proper look, affording him a view of a city he had never seen for himself, but every man, woman and child on Terra knew. The artful spires and bridges he expected from the holocausts had gone, replaced by buildings more fit for war. Not all had changed. He glimpsed the soaring Tower of Hegemon, and the great dome of the Senatorum Imperialis, where giant machines stood guard. Fire, titans, glory and doom, all gone in a heartbeat as the train plunged into the side of a habspire, and thereafter hurried past rockcrete pilings into roots of the earth that showed him nothing but the dark.